In a year when billions of people are going to the polls, the world has a whole new set of AI tools for sowing disinformation.
I think we're right to be worried. We really just cannot afford to mess this up.
And it's not just bad actors to watch for. The tools themselves, like chatbots, are far from perfect.
We have this set of technologies right now. It's here. It's powerful and flawed.
One former White House official says burgeoning AI could affect elections in 2024, plus tracking the flow of misinformation from surprising sources. I'm Nyla Boodoo from Axios. This is One Big Thing.
I think when a lot of people think AI and elections, they're thinking about deepfakes, how Russia could use the technology to send various targeted messages.
That's Axios chief technology correspondent Ina Fried.
One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that if you use Google to get election information, you're probably going to get the right information. If you use one of the chatbots, you may actually be getting misinformation. It's not misinformation created by anyone. It's just not always right.
And that matters when more of the world than ever is voting this year. It's not just the U.S. India, the world's largest democracy, recently announced its 6 weeks of general elections start April 19th. And South Korea, Venezuela, and Ukraine are also among the 60 or so countries at the polls this year. Here in the U.S., Dr. Alondra Nelson was involved in some of the government's earliest talks about how to thoughtfully manage AI and democracy. She co-authored the AI Bill of Rights during her tenure as acting director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy in the Biden administration. Today, she's a professor at the Institute for Advanced Study. At last week's Axios What's Next Summit in Washington, D.C., she sat down with Ina Fried live to talk about her work on chatbots and other kinds of AI in elections. That's our main conversation for this week's One Big Thing.
You've been doing some amazing work with Julia Engwin, who many of you know, fascinating journalist. What have you found in terms of what are the impacts that these tools can have today and might have in a year where not only are Americans going to the polls, but a billion people around the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real challenge. So Julia and I started this summer something called the AI Democracy Projects, and we are just studying in lots of different ways the impact of algorithms on elections, on democracy, and back to the AI Bill of Rights on rights. And how is it impacting these three sets of things? And the first study that we did was working with elections officials from red and blue states. It was a bipartisan effort. So we realized because so many of the large language models hallucinate, and they do so plausibly. So they give you information that looks right. And so unless you know about a particular voting district or about a particular voting law or issue, it looks fine. It sounds great. And so we did what we've been calling sort of civic teaming. We had an all-day event that had AI experts, people from civil society, and election officials. We had colleagues from Maricopa County. We had the Secretary of State from Nevada. And we tested the chatbots on basic election information. So I do appreciate that. I think some of the data says like maybe 25% of Americans have used chatbots. So it's not suggesting that everyone's using this for elections information. But to the extent that they are, can they get valid, reliable information? We had the experts rate the outputs, and more than half of them were inaccurate. 13% were rated to be biased, and between that, they were rated to be harmful and just inaccurate or incomplete.
And inaccuracies here could mean telling you the wrong day. It could mean telling you the wrong procedures for vote by mail. Given where the technology is today, can you really trust a chatbot with today's generative AI to do election information?
Sadly, you can't. And, you know, the election officials were really mortified. And so it was happening. So we had teams of people doing the testing. And to me, or to somebody even working at an election civil society organization, when it says, go to www.icanvote.org, it looks credible. You think like, yeah, you go there and get election information. These URLs didn't exist in some cases. We asked about a predominantly African-American community in Philadelphia. The result was that the community didn't exist and didn't have a polling site there because it couldn't be found. So, we've got challenges with the elections, and I think a lot of the discourse around it and the conversation is about deceptive content. So it's about deliberate disinformation with deepfakes and voice cloning and these sorts of things, and that is surely a problem, and we are already seeing that, you know, rise up as a problem.
Because that's what I was going to ask next, yeah. That the problems you outlined in that article were mostly the system by itself with no malign actor was just giving bad
Correct.
And unreliable information.
Yes.
You know, we've had for the last couple presidential election cycles, outside interference, people trying from Russia, from other places to deliberately sow chaos. How worried are you that we're going to see a flood of social media posts either just poisoning the information landscape or deliberately trying to change things in one way or another?
It's already happening, right? You know, we've already seen, if we think about the New Hampshire Democratic primary, we think about the robocall voice coining of President Biden's voice. So it's a problem, and we know it's happened in past elections. It happened in the last, in the 2016 election for sure.
So, but they didn't have these tools.
When they didn't have these tools, right? So the barrier to entry is much lower. It's much easier to, either if it's for the lulls, for the laughs, or for, you know, they're kind of malign state actors. I mean, it's much easier to do it now. But you compound that with being much easier to use, having more dissemination vehicles with lots of other kinds of social media, and also having the misinformation piece, which is the kind of death by a thousand cuts of tools that are brittle and actually just don't work. I think we're right to be worried. We can't anticipate all of the challenges we'll have in the elections, and I think, and it's going to be cyber securitization of society, because we're going to just have to try to mitigate in place and try to forecast to the extent that we can. But it's going to be a constant, I think, back and forth with dealing with these issues.
And do you have a sense of where the tech companies are in this? Because my sense is that right leading up to the 2020 election, certainly afterward, there was a lot of focus on election security and integrity. My sense is a lot of the companies have quietly scaled back, the big ones,
yes,
the Facebooks of the world. That's one thing. And then you have these new AI companies. Oh, we're very committed. We have four people on our election yes. integrity team. Are you worried that the people controlling the technology aren't devoting enough resources?
Yes. I mean, there have been, as we've seen across the last year, voluntary commitments. So there's also been voluntary commitments from the companies around AI and elections in particular. And lots of, I think, well-meaning discourse about wanting to be responsible actors here. But we really just cannot afford to mess this up. And even going back, Julia and her team at Proof News recently went back to some of the chatbots and tested with some of the same questions, and they hadn't been fixed. And when we released our report, we went to all the companies and said, this is what we found. And they said, oh, you know, we had made promises in December and January that this wasn't going to happen, or we have fixed it, it's not going to happen again. And it's still a problem. And so it's a problem for the chatbots, but what we are, you know, the business model and what the one of the hopes for AI, if we mitigate the risk and get it right, is that you can build whole worlds on these foundation models. And so the foundations are creaky. This is not a foundation on which to build an enterprise business ecosystem, any kind of knowledge ecosystem, an election ecosystem, if you can't get sort of basic accurate information. And it's a real problem for democracy.
In a moment, more of Ina's conversation with Dr. Alondra Nelson. This is One Big Thing from Axios.
What if every work email you got was so short it could fit on one screen and so clear you knew exactly what was needed? You'd see right away what's really new and why it matters to you. That's possible with Axios HQ, a new tool built by Axios, helping teams communicate with the same clarity and efficiency of our best newsletter writers. It's already taking off at Fortune 100 companies and startups too. Learn more at axioshq.com.
Welcome back to One Big Thing from Axios. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Coming up in a bit, how major advertisers online are often unwittingly funding the spread of misinformation. But first, let's get back to the conversation with Ina Fried and Dr. Alondra Nelson, live on stage at Axios' What's Next Summit in Washington, D.C.
I want to rewind a bit to when you were in the White House crafting this AI Bill of Rights. What were the key things that you wanted to make sure got enshrined? Obviously, it wasn't law, it's the first step, but what were you hoping to achieve with that Bill of Rights?
Well, we were taking up some of the work of prior administrations, frankly. So the Obama administration, towards the end, had done really important work on AI and civil rights, on how to think about big data, what were some of the policy issues the nation should be thinking about as we sort of increasingly were using large data sets. In the Trump administration, there was quite a bit of AI legislation passed. In the last few days of the Trump administration, actually, there was an AI, National AI Act that was passed that said things like, we are going to establish, we use AI in government and it's going to be done, you know, abiding democratic values, and we're going to do it, it's going to be trustworthy. And so the question for us coming in the Biden-Harris administration was like, what does that mean? What does it mean to have AI that we try to have abide democratic values or try to have it be trustworthy? So we wanted to, particularly coming into office in the middle of a pandemic, at a time when there was quite a lot of distrust about science, about government, about technology, how do we have a process in which we could engage people in thinking about questions about AI? So we wrote an op-ed, we put the White House and a White House email address at the bottom of the op-ed. We said, anyone can write to us about this. We're trying to think about what are the things that the American public should be asking for, or how should we be thinking about AI technologies in the context of American society. And we spent almost a year talking to school teachers and high school students and lots of experts and folks in local government and state government to sort of get a sense of what they needed and what they were worried about, and also to distill from some really good business partners in some instances and a lot of technological experts. Like, part of the subtitle of the AI Bill of Rights is about making these principles into practices. So systems should be safe and effective, you know, algorithms shouldn't discriminate against you, there should be some modicum of privacy. We were basically distilling the common sense things that people were telling us they wanted, and then trying to really flag what were those initial things that we know we can do.
And certainly the start, sometimes the people use the chatbots or AI systems to generate the information, but the social media layers are where it gets broadcast. We're hearing a lot right now about TikTok, and there's a bunch of real-term concerns. There's a near-term misinformation, bias, discrimination, wealth concentration, and then there's the existential, robots might kill us all. To me, you gotta pay attention to both, but you gotta have two separate conversations. It feels like there's something similar in social media, where we're having one conversation about TikTok and the threat that someday the Chinese might use this to influence us. But are we not in a moment where all sorts of countries are using the American social media we have? How important is it that we regulate what's happening on Facebook and whatever used to be Twitter and all those places in addition to paying attention to TikTok?
So I would slightly quibble and say it's not two different conversations, and this is why we're having a challenge mitigating it, right? Because the challenge that we face with TikTok potentially is, you know, who owns the data and where is it going? Some of the data that we're concerned about is being sold by American data broker companies that are not regulated. So the issue, I think, that really undergirds all of it is really about data. And so the data is circulating. And if we care about data privacy and we care about not sort of capitalizing on American data and being able to sell it all over the place, even accounting for other expert controls and other controls that would say, oh, well, you can sell Americans' data to these countries or people in these countries, but not those countries. It is putting a Band-Aid on the larger issue, which is that we fundamentally need a federal data privacy regulation. Right? You know, we got close last year. I mean, that's not going to solve everything, but it would really sort of create a baseline of expectations that would make it far more difficult for some of the concerns that we have, both from malign actors and just in the day-to-day.
Would you also ban TikTok, or is that not helping?
I think it matters who owns TikTok. And so I think that we have to take that quite seriously. I think we should regulate social media companies. I think we should regulate platforms. And we still have not done that. And some of the issues that we're facing right now that you've even raised are because we've not, for nearly a decade, done these sort of basic things. So let's see.
Well, I would love to talk to you about this stuff for hours, and I hope we'll get a chance to talk some more. I hope you'll continue to be a voice on these issues. And thank you so much for what you're doing and for sharing your insights here at What's Next.
Thank you.
So TikTok and other social media are a big part of this misinformation ecosystem online. But the spread of false news also comes from websites across the internet, funded by advertising dollars from some major brands. That's according to data from fact-checking company NewsGuard, which says it provides tools to help people get accurate information online. Gordon Krowitz is the co-CEO and co-editor-in-chief of NewsGuard. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, Nyla.
So you have a report that says online mis- and disinformation is being paid for often unintentionally by major advertisers. Can you explain how this is happening?
This is in the nature of programmatic advertising. When we think about advertising, you know, in the old days, the Mad Men era, you imagine ad agency people saying, I'd like my ad to be, you know, in Axios, but not somewhere else. That's not how it works anymore. The way it works is an advertiser will say, I want to reach these kinds of people, and then the machines take over. And the average ad campaign these days can appear on tens of thousands of websites. The result of that is that advertisers unwittingly, unintentionally, are funding the worst misinformation websites, healthcare hoax sites, Russian disinformation sites, conspiracy sites, and now AI-generated websites created in order to siphon off ad revenue. If you're wondering why there's so much misinformation, it's a giant business.
How big of a business? How much money are we talking about here?
We've estimated that there's $2.6 billion a year going to misinformation news sources.
And how are we defining misinformation news sources?
One of the data sets that NewsGuard maintains is what we call our reliability ratings. We've rated all the news and information sources that account for 95% of engagement in 9 countries around the world, 35,000 news sources. In the U.S., about 40% of those get an untrustworthy rating. You have to be pretty bad to get an untrustworthy rating from NewsGuard.
And so what would warrant getting a really bad rating?
We have 9 criteria that we use. These are apolitical criteria of journalistic practice. Does the source repeatedly publish false content? Does it disclose ownership? Does it separate news and opinion? Basic criteria like that.
Gordon, can you connect the dots for us here? How important are these advertising dollars to spreading misinformation?
Let me put it this way. If the $2.6 billion a year in ad revenue currently going to misinformation sites stopped going to those sites, thousands and thousands of misinformation sites would disappear. By the way, even websites that are funded in some other way benefit from programmatic advertising. For example, a couple of years ago, we determined that the biggest advertiser on Russian disinformation site called Sputnik News was Warren Buffett, because Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway owns Geico, the insurance company, and Geico was the biggest advertiser on Sputnik News. Now, Warren Buffett doesn't wake up in the morning asking himself, what favor can I do today for Vladimir Putin? But it is in the nature of programmatic advertising that if brands don't take some step to make sure that they're not supporting misinformation sites, their ads will definitely appear on those sites, subsidizing misinformation.
So the obvious question then is, what are people doing about this? Like, what did Warren Buffett say when you brought this to his attention?
An increasing number of brands now recognize the problem, and an increasing number of them are taking steps to make sure that they're not supporting misinformation sites, but it's still a relatively small percentage.
So what do you think news consumers need to know as they navigate online in this election season?
I think we learned from earlier elections that it was already really hard for news consumers to have any idea if a source they saw in their Facebook feed or now on TikTok, whether that source is reliable or not reliable. That problem has gotten much worse with artificial intelligence. One of the things that NewsGuard does is we track the number of what we call unreliable AI-generated news websites that are entirely or largely done simply through AI. Many of them publish falsehoods, and we've now counted as of this week 777 of them. And they take names that make them sound like regular news sites to masquerade as legitimate independent news sources. So one of the things that news consumers can do, of course, is try to figure out themselves if a source is a reliable one, or they could use a browser extension that give them ratings for news sites directly in their feeds, Facebook, X, in their search results, wherever they're going on the internet to get news. and they can see who's behind it, who owns it, what they've published in the past, or make up their own mind about whether they think that's a reliable source or not.
Gordon Krovitz, former publisher of The Wall Street Journal, co-CEO and co-editor-in-chief of NewsGuard. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for this week's edition of One Big Thing. The One Big Thing team includes supervising producer Alexandra Boti and sound engineer Jay Cowett, who also composed and produced our music along with Alex Sugiyara. Asia Whitaker-Moore is Axios' executive editor, and Sarah Kailani-Gu is Axios' editor-in-chief. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Happy Easter to all of you who are celebrating. We'll see you back here next Thursday.
What if every work email you got was so short it could fit on one screen? And so clear you knew exactly what was needed. You'd see right away what's really new and why it matters to you. That's possible with Axios HQ, a new tool built by Axios, helping teams communicate with the same clarity and efficiency of our best newsletter writers. It's already taking off at Fortune 100 companies and startups too. Learn more at axioshq.com.